Nora Speaks is a weekly podcast that tugs at the soul and consciousness of the Black community. With show topics such as youth empowerment, education, women's impact, and civic engagement, Nora Speaks challenges the listener to not only join the movement, but be the movement. On the show, you'll learn from insightful guests who have demonstrated capacity in these fields and more, and I'm your host, Nora Muhammad. Welcome to the show. Greetings, Nora Speaks podcast listeners. You are in for a special treat as today we welcome to the show Cher McCall, who is a licensed social worker working with the adolescent population. In this interview, we talked about pathways to healing for young people. We talked about how us as advocates who work with youth workers, parents, families, caregivers, and caseworkers can empower our young people to get past some of the traumatic experiences that they've had. And Cher did such a wonderful job outlining the role of a social worker, the impacts that her work has had on young people that she's worked with, and also the impact that the work has had on her. You will certainly enjoy this episode. And in the show notes, I will include ways to contact Cher so that you can communicate with her offline. But in the meantime, enjoy the show. Okay, so we are joined on the Nora Speaks podcast with a very special guest. In with us is Cher McCall. Hi, Cher.
Hi, Nora. How are you?
All right. So you are a social worker, a licensed social worker, and your work is centered around the adolescent population.
Yes.
Right. So you want to tell us about the work that you do?
I work with adolescent youth in and outside of the home, delivering substance abuse services to them, counseling services, family counseling, crisis counseling, things of that sort, yes.
Okay. Is your work mostly with males or females specifically, or do you work with both?
For years, I worked specifically with girls, but in recent years, I've worked with boys as well, yeah.
Okay. And the young people that you work with, how do you come in contact with them? Is it through...
Referrals.
Yeah. So are they... referred to you as a result of some kind of acting out delinquency? Is it family issues?
Yes, it may be family issues. It may be acting out delinquency, maybe contact with the justice system or the courts of that sort. And then, maybe DIFAS or CMOs have reached out and realized that they need counseling services. Yes.
Okay, so I've worked with young people from time to time. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I know about working with them is the trust building component. It is very difficult to just jump in and work with them. I know you have to let them know that you're committed to them, because a lot of times they'll see you as just another case officer or case manager, and they don't always open up right away. So how do you go about building rapport when you're working with young people?
One of the things I've learned over the years, it wasn't always that way, is you don't start immediately with the main issue, sometimes with adolescents. With adults, sometimes, most of the times you can. With adults, I've done family counseling, I've done couples counseling. With adults, they're usually there for a reason. They're there to solve their problems. So you can ask them exactly, what are you here for? Why are you here? Sometimes I like to ease into the conversation, talk about everything else, school and your friends and things of that sort, just so that they can understand that they don't have to talk directly about the problem or the issue, because sometimes they're afraid to talk about what brought them there. They're scared. They've told their story 50 million times, so they don't want to tell it again. Sometimes they're like, read the paperwork, you already know what I did. And they're afraid that you too are going to leave them like everybody else has left them in their past. So you kind of have to let them know that you're going to have some longevity with them. You're going to be there for a while, and and that it's okay to kind of open up. And if you don't feel comfortable opening up, and I say this all the time to my clients, if you don't feel comfortable opening up with me, it's okay. But I challenge you to find someone that you feel comfortable opening up with, that you can trust and that can guide you in the right direction. And that usually helps open them up as well, to let them know you're not forced. I'm not forcing you to tell me all your dirty little secrets. You know, we just kind of start little by little, and you'll be surprised how much information you can get just by talking to them about regular life. You know, if they can tell war stories, they'll tell war stories all day long, how they were hanging out with their friends, what they did with this boy or this girl and things like that. And that kind of conversation leads into what the problem is or what the situations are and how they got in contact with the justice system or why, you know, why am I here? You know, mm-hmm. what am I doing here? And what do you want from me? You know, a lot of times they think you want something from them, you know, but it's really, what do you want from me? What do you want to have? What experience do you want to have with me? And what do you want it to come out with? And that usually kind of breaks the ice a little bit.
Okay. So when you're working with them, what is your, you know, in whatever capacity that, you know, you're introduced to these young people, what is your general objective with them?
To bring them to a better place than where they are at that moment.
Okay.
To educate them. When you're working with youth, it's more teaching and guiding than you are with adults. You know, with adults, you're more so helping the person realize their own potential, realize their own, they have the answers, you know, they just want to know, you know, you just have to ask the right kind of questions to bring those answers to light and to bring it into consciousness for themselves. And the same thing with adolescents, but, you know, we have a saying sometime, it's, you know, when you're dealing with adolescents, it's not so much rehabilitating them. They have never been habilitated to rehabilitate anything. So you're teaching them all the time. This is what this is. You're educating them so that they can make informed decisions, you know, when they go back out. They didn't know a lot of things when they were making decisions that they were making. Mm-hmm. But once you educate them and provide them with resources, provide them with avenues to make the better decisions, you find that they're more equipped to make them. Do they always make them? No. Do they always go down the right direction? Absolutely not. But we always tell them, but now you're an informed consumer. You can no longer go back outside and say, I didn't know. Mm-hmm. Now you do know.
Okay. Let's just step back for a minute and tell us about you. Tell us about your background and what brought you to social work. Did you always want to be a social worker? Did you specifically want to work with the adolescent population?
Oh, no, not at all. I knew I always wanted to. It's so funny. I talked with my brother and I remember us having a conversation. I was probably about 16 years old and my mom's asking us, so what do you want to do when you grow up? And I said, I want to have a deaf school. I want to work with people who can't hear, with kids who can't hear. I used to love the Helen Keller story. I thought that was so amazing. And how she taught this girl, you know, who was deaf and mute and couldn't see. And she taught her sign language. And I thought it was the best thing ever. So that's kind of the direction I started to go in. And then when I went to college, I wanted to become a nurse. My friend's mother was a nurse. And I thought, I was like, wow, that's so great. And then I didn't do too good in chemistry class. I was not a really good chemistry student. I was doing good in all my other classes, but what was some of my other classes? And when I went to one of my advisors, she was like, it's really funny that all your social work elective courses, you're getting straight A's in them. But in all these other biology courses, have you ever thought about social work? And I'm like, well, what kind of job can you get in sociology, you know? And she's like, there's a lot of things you can do. And I was like, oh, okay. So I did sociology major. And then, my supervisor after college, you know, she was a social worker. And I worked with so many different populations. I worked with developmental disabilities. I worked with, adults in mental health and psychiatric. I worked with the elderly. I worked with infants. I worked all the way around the gamut and back again. And I kind of realized I didn't like any of those populations didn't like the population, but it just didn't fit, what I did. But a friend of mine comes to me and says, you're doing this program with me. And I said, what program? She's like, you're going to volunteer and be a mentor. And I'm like, what? Where are you dragging me into now? Mm-hmm. You know? So I do this, I was in Dyfus in Philly. It was a rites of passage program. We go there and they have us do, we mentor the girls for months. And at the end we had to do a workshop. And at the end of the workshop, I did it on health and your bodies, because I thought, you know, of course, women need to be educated on their bodies. And after that, I was done. And I said, I know what I want for my life. I was 29 years old. And I said, I know what I want to do. I called a friend of mine who was working with adolescent youth at the time. And I said, I know what I want to do. I want to work with girls and I want to, you know, work with adolescents. I had the best feeling ever. It was like an epiphany. And she said, well, guess what? I have a position available for you right now. And wow, that's how I got into the social service field.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. What a wonderful story.
Yeah, it's great.
I think that speaks to a lot of times we ask young people, even children 9 and 10 years old, we say, what do you want to be when you grow up? Mm-hmm. And I listened to a lot of podcasts, and I heard someone say once that is really unfair to ask a child, mm-hmm, what do you want to be when you grow up? Mm-hmm. Quite frankly, you don't know what you want to do when you grow up, when you are grown up,
right?
Sometimes, you know?
Absolutely.
And so sometimes when we ask children that, then we kind of put them on that track. If they say, I want to be a doctor, right, then we put them on that track to medical school, mm-hmm, right? And I happened to be at a banquet at an awards dinner. And the keynote speaker was talking about when we're asking children what they want to do, a lot of times we're asking them about a specific career. Mm-hmm. So I want to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you ask that child what they want to do, mm-hmm, they might just want to heal.
Right.
And healing can come in so many different,
absolutely,
you know, avenues.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think that's kind of what you're speaking to. You wanted to help children, mm-hmm, who could not hear, who, mm-hmm, could not speak. You know, you wanted to help them be able to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
I'm doing exactly what I said.
And you're doing exactly that.
And not in the capacity that I thought in my infancy stages of my, of career choosing. But it's funny, I had that conversation with my mother, and she's like, you're doing exactly what you said you wanted to do. These children, they don't know how to speak. You know, they weren't listening. They can't hear. And you're doing exactly what you want to do. And I was like, wow, you know, thanks, Mom. You know, that was really great. And also, you know, to your point, when you're asking kids, what do they want to be when they grow up? A lot of times with the youth, I ask them, what makes you happy?
Right.
You know, what makes you feel good? Because if you can figure out what makes you happy and what makes you feel good, and you're able to make money doing it, you'll never be upset going to work a day in your life. So, and it helps in working with boys too, because, you know, sometimes you have to kind of pry communication out with boys. That always sets something in their mind. It always opens up a little bit of their spirit, because they've never been asked that question before. What makes you happy?
Right.
You know, I think it's instilled in men sometimes. They are the ones to give happiness, right?
Mm.
They are the ones to make, you got to make your girl happy. You got to make your mom happy. You got to make your parents happy. But what makes you happy, and how can you make money doing that?
Right. That's wonderful.
So, yeah.
So working with these young people, you know, the service industry, if you're a servant leader in some capacity, there's some reciprocation while you're giving a service to young people.
Mm-hmm.
What is that doing for you?
It feels good when you have a former client come back to you and say, thank you. You know, thank you so much. They often try to reach out or call back. I recently had a girl write me and say, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be where I am today. She said, I'm married with 2 children. I'm a stay-at-home mom. And you told me, have hope, and you can be happy in your life. And this is a young lady who told me, I don't even know what happiness feels like or looks like. You know, I can smile, but I don't feel the happiness that I see when other people smile.
Wow.
And it was so disheartening to me. Because, you know, I look at myself as like the Tinkerbell of life. We're going to just spring pixie dust on everybody and just be
right.
Happy. Everybody be happy. And when she said that, I just imagined how imprisoned she felt in her mind and in her heart to not know how to accept love and happiness.
Mm.
And I told her to keep her heart open to, now that you're older now and mature now, that keep your heart open to finding someone who knows how to give you happiness, and making yourself happy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you make yourself happy? And it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
It's so possible. And it feels so good. You
mm-hmm.
know, happiness feels so
yes.
good. And when she looked at me and I said, it feels so good to feel the love. When somebody says something nice about you, say thank you. Just accept it. Because we have these blockers and these walls up a lot of times, especially when you've been traumatized as a youngster. And you put up a lot of walls. Of course, you know, by right, you should put these walls and these blockers up because you have to protect yourself. But when you have to learn which walls to pull down when, right. You know, and that's some of the things we try to teach them, to be able to identify when and how.
Wow. I'm really enjoying this conversation. So recently I was a part of a youth program where they had a formal event, like a culminating ballroom event, and the young people read their poetry. And while we were rehearsing over these last few weeks, I heard a theme with some young people in which they described specific hardships, hurts, and traumas that they had endured. And so you're talking about the young lady that you met when she was a teenager,
yes.
Who talked about, I don't even know what happiness looks like. I don't feel the happiness that I see in other people when they smile. And these young people are, you know, in an adolescent age range, and they're experiencing so much at this stage in their life, yeah. That they are expressing, you know, I'm coming over it, I'm coming out of it. Mm-hmm. So what can parents who are listening, aunties who are listening, youth workers who are listening, what can we do to mitigate the challenges that our young people are dealing with, these traumatic experiences, the hardships that they're experiencing at these young ages when they really don't have the sophistication or the capacity early on, because we don't teach young people about dealing with hardship.
Right.
How can you advise youth workers, parents, family members, relatives to kind of insulate young people to the experiences that we're going through so our hardships don't bleed into them?
Mm-hmm. The vicarious trauma, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So a lot of times what I try to tell parents is you have to give them a space and opportunity to express. And sometimes when children are expressing themselves and they're saying one thing, they're really meaning something else. When they're saying that you did this or you did that, or why won't you let me this, why won't you let me that, there's something else sometimes going on there. And don't always look for the opportunity to communicate to your kids only during discipline times.
Right.
You know, maybe every night before they go to bed, you know, that's the 20-minute time that you have with them. Create that opportunity to communicate, because that's when a lot of stuff comes out, you know. Creating opportunities for other people to enter into their lives. Trusted people that you trust. My aunts were very instrumental. And at that age, I didn't know they were running back telling my mother everything. But my aunts were able to kind of get things out of me, because they weren't technically my mother, and I trusted them with a lot of information. And they would do the same thing, and I guess that's where I got some of my counseling style from. But just talk about everyday regular stuff. What's going on with you and your friends? You know, what's going on with this? And I remember even when my son was very, very young, he used to come home and say, Mommy, he stole my lollipop, you know. And we're talking about lollipops, you know, where you kind of think, oh, well, who cares that he stole your lollipop? It's not that big of a deal. But to him, it was a big deal. And that was opening up the gate to communication, saying that my mother is accessible to me, and I can communicate things to me, because today it's going to be a lollipop. Next year, it's going to, you know, it might be a girl next year. It might be somebody bullying him next year. But opening up that opportunity. And when you listen to little things that they're saying, pick up on those things, because there's always more to the story.
Mm.
There's always more to that story. To kind of help them with that trauma is, like I said, I definitely believe in the village mentality. It takes a village. It might be something that, you know, my daughter says to my friend's mom, you know, that she picks up on and say, hey, you might want to take a look at that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might want to dig into that a little bit, because she mentioned something about that. Kids open up in different places in different ways. And you just have to have that ear and that eye to be open to them and be accessible, emotionally and mentally accessible to them.
Okay.
Kids are so funny. Working with the girls sometimes, you know, every day you come in, they know exactly what you're wearing. They know when the last time you wore that outfit. They know, Miss Sherry, you wore those earrings last week. And, you know, they're very perceptive. Children are. Children know when you're not emotionally available to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes that, you know, I'm working with a kid, and if I'm emotionally distracted, they're quiet and they don't feel like they can open up, because they know that you're emotionally distracted and this is not the right time to access her or think that you can handle their emotions. I had the one kid tell me, I don't think you can handle what has happened to me. You know, I don't think that you can deal with my story. I know you heard a lot of stories, but you can't deal with me. And I said, wow, try me. I may be able to. I've heard a lot. I might not have been through what you've been through, but I know the range of emotions that you may have experienced. We can all identify with emotions. We can all identify with being hurt, being betrayed. You know, we can all identify with anxiety sometimes, depression at times. We can all identify with some of those feelings that we've all experienced at one time and another and within our lifetime. So we speak to the emotion and not so much the situation. Okay, because if you say, you've never been through this. No, but how did you feel in that moment? And I know it's the cliche, you know, counselor's question. Well, how did you feel? Or how did you make that feel? But it's a powerful thing to bring out of a person. Because once you bring out of it, how you deal with that emotion is very different. You know, it's very different. And letting them know that you can handle that. I can deal with it. It's not so much the story. It's how are we going to move on from dealing with those emotions and not being stuck in the anger, not being stuck in the depression and the anxiety and things of that sort.
So I know also that those who give care to people can become secondary victims of the trauma, if you will. Trauma, so how do you and how would you advise other caregivers, mental health caregivers? I've attended first aid classes for caregivers. So how do you cope? What are your outlets when you're getting all of this? You know, how do you manage that?
For a while, I also saw a therapist, to kind of help me. And in counseling field, you have to go through counseling to become a counselor, to become a therapist, because how do you know how your client feels unless you've been through it yourself? And it's kind of weird sitting on that side of the couch, but it is, it's a lot to kind of, especially if you have a difficult, case that you're dealing with. I've also had, supervision. I utilize supervision a lot to kind of, talk out, you know, what's going on with this case, how to deal with it, how to deal with it appropriately, the resources that, that you can use to help this client out. And also a psychologist told me a long time ago, he said, even, and it sounds pretty sad, but once you realize that you will not save them all, you know, it makes it a little bit easier for you to deal with, you know, some of the downfalls that come with this business, because you're going to lose clients. You know, you're going to, you know, I've had clients die. I've had clients go to prison for years, get life sentences, things like that. When you hear those things, you feel like, oh, man, you know, what didn't I do? But then when you see the success stories, you say, oh, yeah, I'm married and have children and I'm living my happy life right now. And I'm working and I'm going to school and, you know, they're successful, you know, in their own right. You say, wow, you know, what did I do? You know, or maybe it's not you at all. Maybe it's the fact that they were able to get through that season of their life. My father always tells me, you meet people for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. And because I know I'm not going to be a permanent staple in their life, I let them know this is my season in your life. And what are you going to get from this season? It may be a reason. I may only meet you for a few days and then you have to move on with your life. But what reason are we meeting here together? And it kind of helps them to realize that these are different phases in my life and I'm going to have to move forward.
Okay. So it sounds like, too, that you kind of detach from the hero syndrome, thinking that you're going to go in and save somebody, you know, you're going to have an S on your chest and wear a cape on your back, that you're coming to the rescue. And I heard somebody say once, you have to just work the process and detach from the outcome.
Yes.
It sounds like that's what you're saying.
Yes, yes. And you know, healing is a long, long process. So sometimes people think that, you know, I'm going to come in here and I'm going to give them this little blue pill and I'm going to give them all this loveliness and they're going to go on and take this advice, you know. But it's not that easy. You know, when you're healing, it takes years and years and years. And I'm glad I was fortunate enough to be in the business this long that I've seen the outcome years and years later. You know, you hear sometimes kids go on with their lives and, you know, they mess up and they were back on drugs or they were doing this and, you know, having problems and things like that. But 10 years down the line, they're doing okay. You know, 10 years down the line, they're making things happen. So when you see that kind of outcome later on in life, you're just like, okay, so this might work. You know what I mean? This might work, and it's okay. And it's okay. Yeah, so you have to kind of detach from the outcome. But I never take anyone lightly, you know, to say that this is a lost case. You know what I mean? You know, this, after all, I've seen it all. You know, you never say that, because that one kid that you think is a lost case would be the one that would blow your mind later on in life. So I never take it lightly. We always say we're not making pencils and, you know, and paper. We are building lives, and we are dealing with human emotion. Mm-hmm. When you're dealing with that, it's very layered and complicated.
Okay. Cher, I want to ask you, I know I said this already, but I think this conversation is very informative. It's nice to have a little bit of a insight into what's happening, what's going on. I mean, we see some young people in our communities that are certainly troubled. We may see them in our schools, see them in detention centers, but we don't always see the people who are working with them, who are working behind the scenes, behind closed doors, to help guide and navigate these young people towards healing. So I appreciate the work that you do, and I definitely appreciate you joining me for this interview.
Thank you.
So I want to ask you, in general, overall, what principles, or is there a personal mantra? You talked about, you know, your father and your mother, and they're definitely, obviously, they've been very influential. But what principles or mantras do you live by?
Plant the seed and pray that it grows. Plant many seeds in their minds. I think that's one of the biggest things, because they're so young that, you know, and just like a seedling is young, you have to wait for it to sprout. And that's one of the things I've learned over the years. You know, in the beginning it was like, why don't you just get it right now? Well, it took 17, 18 years for them to develop these characteristics. It's not going to happen overnight. And once you plant those seeds in their mind, you know that hopefully at some point somebody's going to water it. You know, somebody's going to shine a little light on it. And they'll see little things and little windows of opportunities over their lives to be able to grasp that thing that they thought was hopeless in before. One other thing, and then a friend just asked me this too. I have a lot of friends that are in sales, right? My brothers and I have friends that are in the sales business. And they were like, yeah, your business is so different. And I was like, no, it's not. I said, I don't sell gadgets, you know, I don't sell people, but I sell hope, you know. And I think that's one of the hardest things to sell when you're dealing with someone who has been so dramatically hurt throughout their lives, you know, and dealt with so much trauma over their lives. Their lives look bleak, you know. They don't see a future, and they don't see a tomorrow. They don't see happiness, and they don't see hope. But if you can plant the seed of hope and shine a little light on it while they're in your presence, then hopefully that it can grow.
That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Is there a book? Is there a certain author? Is there a podcast? Is there someone or is there a resource that you return to that's been influential, or that you've read once that has dramatically impacted you, impacted your work, impacted how you approach your family?
I'll have to think about that one.
Okay.
I think there's been lots of different materials over the years that I've read, educational seminars that I've gone to, and just really being entrenched in the field with other people like-minded, being able to share and understand exactly what we do. And it's so funny. I mean, you know, if you work with, and everybody does the same thing, it's like, yeah, people don't understand what we do. Like, people really have a very difficult time understanding exactly what it is to have the life of a social worker or a counselor or somebody who does therapy, especially with the adolescent population, because although, you know, you get up and you go to work every day, those human emotions, you can't escape sometimes, you know. Sometimes you do take the emotions home. You know, I can't say that I haven't cried over a client. I can't say that I haven't felt, you know, hurt over a client, or happiness and joy. So your emotions are connected directly to another human spirit. Mm-hmm. And not so much, oh, I got a promotion at job, or, you know, I landed that account or anything like that. It's directly connected with another human spirit. So when you are connected with somebody in that way, you have to have a way, like you said, to make sure you just focus on the direct connection right there. And then allow them to live their life and kind of just almost like letting your baby go. You know, mm-hmm. you got to let them go. You got to let them fall so they can get up and things like that, and just kind of let them move on. But it's, I think that's the most difficult part of it, working with in this field.
Okay. Just a couple more questions for you. My first question is, my next question is, how do you see social media impact? When we grew up, we didn't have such direct access to everything and to everybody, and people didn't have such immediate access to us.
Yes.
So how do you see social media's impact in child development, in childhood traumas, in conflicts among youth, and also self-image and personal development in young people?
I see that it is directly impacting their ability to communicate effectively. Because if you're always texting and talking through a communication device, the ability to talk to another human being one-on-one and be able to hone in your or develop your ability, your communication skills, is severely, you know, impacted. So, and a lot of times that's what we do. And a lot of kids, you know, they don't like going to group. They don't like, you know, having some of these conversations. Sometimes they're like, oh my God, we're so bored. But if you give them a topic that they feel they can really talk on, you kind of work with that, you know, and they say, well,
right.
No cursing, and not no cursing just because, you know, it's foul language, but how do you develop your vocabulary skills enough and not text the letter U instead of the word U?
Right.
And it affects the how they write. They can't complete a full sentence because they don't know how to write. They write. I talked to someone who was in academia, and they said these kids have a very difficult time writing because they don't write anymore. You know, nobody writes papers and things like that, and, you know, they're always texting. So it affects their communication skills, it affects their vocabulary, and it affects their ability to connect emotionally with another person. I think it may have a very, very a huge impact on marriages as well. Because mm-hmm. if you have a hard time actually connecting with another human being and you live this Facebook life, right? Because on Facebook, everybody's doing well, right? Everybody's doing really good on Facebook. You know, all of the relationships are looking good. But when you're actually in the trenches of marriage and you're in the trenches of a relationship, that's not how your relationship actually looks, mm-hmm. you know? And sometimes that's another way I try to connect with them, is talking about how to develop relationships with other people, platonic and intimate. We're not just talking about, you know, how do you have a boyfriend or how do you have a girlfriend? It's like, how do I connect with another human being to have this exchange, a symbiotic exchange of energy where it's positive and it's uplifting and it's moving me forward?
Yeah. Great. Do you have a personal mission statement, or do you have a personal mission, or what do you see as your contribution to your community?
I've been asked that question. My personal contribution to community is to, I guess, to promote healing, to really promote healing, to heal the human spirit and heal relationships. Because, you know, I always say it takes at least two people to bring you here and six people to bury you. So we're not living in this world alone. Right. We have to have a connection with other human beings. And I always tell this little research fact, if you know that babies that aren't touched, babies that aren't, you know, coddled in infancy, show indentations in their brain. We are built as a human body to have touch, to have affection, to have attention, to be connected with another human spirit. You know, you are connected to your mother in the womb. You're connected to your parents biologically, to your siblings biologically. So we're meant to have an exchange of energy with another human being. And if that energy is negative, or that exchange is always something negative, and it's a put down, it's very difficult to develop in the right way. But if it's a positive exchange of energy, if it's like a positive relationship, then you can grow and your brain grows and serotonin's are released into your system, you know. You're able to kind of develop healthy, you know. You can get cancer in your body, you can get ulcers in your body if you're under stress, if you don't have a human connection. So it's very important, and that's what I do. I teach kids a lot, and even relation people in their own relationships with adults, how to communicate and how to connect with another person. You know, if you're just arguing just for the sake of arguing, what are you getting the point across? But what is your purpose in communicating with this? Are you trying to, you know, just tell them what you want to tell them? Or do you want that person to learn from that relationship with you? Mm-hmm. You know, I would rather that you learned from me and I learned from you, other than me just telling you what you need to do with your life. That's not my job. You know, a lot of people say, I don't want to go to therapy. Well, I'm going to therapy for this, so somebody else can tell me what to do. If you have a therapist that it always tells you what to do with your life, then that's not real therapy. You know, it's helping you come to those and to answer the questions about what's going on with you, about what's going on in your relationships in your life. So.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, final question. I don't just encourage people to join the movement, but I encourage people to be the movement, meaning however they live their life, whatever community connections that they have, however they're building their families, to be the movement in their actions and in how they relate to their community. So how would you encourage the Nora Speaks podcast audience to be the movement?
I do a family conference call with our family probably once a month, and one of the questions on the family conference call was what was some of the implications or how did this affect us. Hopefully my family hears this and doesn't get mad I'm messing it up, but basically what do we do about everything, the current events that are going on today with these, you know, the mass shootings and, you know, all of the crazy stuff that's going on in the world, you know, how does it impact us and how do we see that shooting in Vegas that happened? So with that, my cousin gets on the phone and says, I know people won't be really happy about this response, something to that effect. But I wonder how it felt to be him, to feel that he had no other hope but to do that and to end up killing himself. Where was he in his mind and in his family and in his state of being? And what can we do as a family to change that? And it was to go out and be this fearless hope seller, you know. If somebody is sad, if you see somebody sad, you know, a simple hello, a simple how are you, a simple you look nice today can change that person's world. You never know what somebody else is struggling with or somebody else is dealing with. I had this at an old job. It was this woman, and every day I came in, she looked so angry. And I would give, I mean, listen, I like saying hello. And I am, like I said, I can be Tinkerbell. Hi, how are you? And I'm saying hello. And she looks so angry every day. And I'm wondering, like, what in the world is wrong? I'm giving her my best hellos every day, okay? Like, hey, girl, how are you? I'm giving her the best that I got, right? And still, no budge. Until one day I came in and I said, what's the matter? You know, what's the matter? Are you okay? And she said, no, I struggle with chronic pain. Mm. You know, she struggles with chronic pain. So what I was reading as anger because she didn't want to speak was more so her dealing with pain. And I could not imagine what it feels like to be in pain every day. And you don't know what people are dealing with. From that day forward, she spoke. Mm-hmm. From that day forward, she was able to say hello. And she smiles, you know, and you don't know what you're imparting to other people by just giving them a little bit of hope, by just sharing a little bit of love, by just sharing a little bit of your positive energy. And just something like that, just anything simple as that. You don't know the impact that you can have on other people and little parts of your life that is helping, joining the movement and, you know, being the movement. And the movement is healing in this world because we need a lot of healing. Our world is so broken. Our children are so broken. But just simply letting even a child know, wow, you look really nice today. Wow, look how handsome you are. Look, where are you going? Oh, wow, that's very interesting. Letting them know that everybody is not negative. You know, you don't have to put walls up to everybody.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I like that. I like that. Just be kind. Just mm-hmm. be kind to other people. Mm-hmm. This has been a wonderful interview, Cher. I want to thank you for everything that you shared with me and with the podcast listeners. Is there any way that you would like people to reach out to you, get in touch with you, support the work that you do?
I'm at CherMcCall@gmail.com. You can always send me an email and reach out and let me know where are you in the movement to help heal our children. And I can get back to you in that way.
Okay, and I'll make sure to include that email address in the show notes.
Thank you.
Thank you again.
All right.
Thank you again for listening to the Nora Speaks podcast. Be on the lookout for another episode coming at you fresh next week. And as always, if you want to learn more about me and the work that I do, visit my website, norazahira.com. Or if you have a listener question that you would like me to answer on air, you can email me at questions@norazahira.com. You can also follow me on Facebook at Nora Zahira Muhammad and on Instagram at NoraZ20. I'll be sure to include links to the above in today's show notes. If this show has value to you, please like and subscribe and share it out with family and friends, and be sure to check out previous episodes. And remember, don't just join the movement, be the movement. Stay in peace.